Who was Saul of Tarsus, and why did God choose him as his apostle to the Gentiles? This is Carl Kosar from Walla Walla University School of Theology. Welcome to Good Word, our weekly radio program that explores biblical and theological topics that are central to our Christian faith. Today we begin a new series of Bible lessons based on Paul's letter to the Galatians. To help us explore this important subject, I've invited two of my colleagues to join me in the discussion, Dr. Paul Dibdahl and Dr. Dave Thomas, who are both professors at the School of Theology here at Walla Walla University. Welcome, gentlemen, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
The Bible study guides for this quarter focus on what some call the Apostle Paul's most fiery letter, his letter to the Galatians. And here in our opening lesson, we get to focus more on some background material of who Paul was and the work God did in his life. So let's start off more in general. What do we know about this man named Paul? Was he always a Christian?
No, not always a Christian. I think in your introduction you mentioned Paul of Tarsus, so we know something about where he came from. Tarsus, not a part of Palestine or Israel. He lived along the coast of the Mediterranean in what would be modern-day Turkey. A religious man, certainly.
Very much religious.
Very strong Jew, but not a Christian, at least to begin with.
Interesting today, too, because very religious, and I think it goes back to his background, because he did grow up outside the land of Palestine, which meant that to be Jewish, he and his family had to make a deliberate attempt to be Jewish. Otherwise, they'd be consumed by the overall culture of the Greco-Roman world. So we know this is someone who's not a Jew by convenience, but this is by conviction on his part.
Mm-hmm. I've always been intrigued by the fact that he was a Roman citizen. And I've wondered, I'm waiting for the day when we discover exactly how he obtained that. I mean, he was a citizen by birth, not by other means.
That's an interesting question. We do know that citizenship was not given out freely in those days, like it was later in the Roman Empire. But usually it was something that was given to someone because they had done some act of generosity that helped the Roman Empire. And so many scholars think that either Paul's grandfather or perhaps his dad, who we know their vocation, Paul was a tent maker, someone who worked with leather. And we know that Tarsus was the main gateway that was passed from Asia into Syria. And we know that there were several campaigns by Pompey the Great, by Julius Caesar and Mark Antony. And so many people think that perhaps his father or grandfather did something that benefited the army as they passed through, and they had this grant then in return of citizenship. Mm. But it's also surprising, too, because we know that he was Jewish, and he tells us that, of course, he himself was circumcised. And in Judaism, you were circumcised on the eighth day. So what's interesting is that because he says he was born a Roman citizen, there was also a specific practice you had to follow in order to be identified as a citizen. And that is, on the ninth day after your birth, you were supposed to be taken down to the local courthouse of your city there, and you had to be registered with a three-part Roman name. And so I find it quite interesting to think that on the eighth day he's circumcised.
Yes. Kind of a busy second week for him there, the eighth and ninth day.
It was a very busy one, very busy one for him. We also know that, of course, that eventually he did leave home, and he went to study in Jerusalem, and he studied to be a Pharisee under Gamaliel. What do we know about Pharisees? Does that give us any insights into Paul and his sense of identity?
Well, Pharisees, one of the groups within Judaism, a group that saw secular society, Greco-Roman, Hellenistic influences as dangerous. And so while they lived in society, they tried to keep themselves separate from society through a variety of means. And they were very zealous for the law, very interested in keeping the instructions, not just that were in the Hebrew Bible, but also things that the rabbis taught and various traditions that were associated with that. Food laws, for example, very important to them. You only eat with the right type of people, and you only eat the right sorts of foods that have been slaughtered in the right way and so forth. Very, very, we would probably say particular and even fanatical if we were to see the degree to which they tried to live out their religion in everyday life, but very, very they didn't take religion lightly. Maybe that's one way of putting it.
Yeah, I think today people speak very easily disparagingly of Pharisees, which is not the case in their day. They were much admired by a lot of people.
They were looked up to in society.
Yeah, right. And I think we should be careful not to just glibly dismiss them or point out that they were some kind of hypocrites. Certainly they were among, there were hypocrites there, and maybe their religion became more form than substance at some point, but we make a bad mistake when we think that they were not admired.
I think for the common person, the Pharisees were seen as kind of the ideal spiritual people. That's the ideal that you would sort of strive.
We could say they took Scripture seriously.
Very seriously, yes.
And Paul was an ardent Pharisee.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we see people today who are very, very conservative in their behavior and so forth, but they don't go around killing people. So how? What are we to make of Paul? Why someone who was so religious, how could that become someone who's so violent?
I think that's a good question. But I think it's partly the world in which Paul lived. Mm-hmm. There are parts of the world today where we see devout, extremely religious people who I think because of culture more than religion even – are prone to try to enforce their religion in violent ways.
I think also, too, to look back at Paul to realize that, you know, they had tremendous promises in the Old Testament, things God wanted to do for the nation of Israel. And they struggled with those promises and in the reality that they were living under Roman oppression. And so I think Paul was looking around like many Jews to say, what is keeping God from blessing us? Mm-hmm. And I think that he saw in the Christians a group of people, in his opinion, who were most to be despised because these are people who were flagrantly blaspheming God by saying that this man, Jesus, this crucified man, was God. And Paul, I think, had a sense that if he could just stop this heresy, that maybe then God would be able to bless the people of Israel.
But so your question is an interesting one because the dynamic of killing in God's name is certainly not absent from history, and it becomes a very scary thing when somebody becomes so confident about their own sense of religious faith that they're willing to destroy somebody else.
But then to think also the fact, and we have people like this today, we have terrorists in the Middle East and so forth, but with Paul, we find someone who turns around, entirely turns around. What was it, in your opinion, that changed this man?
It was a meeting with Jesus.
A rather dramatic one and a surprising one.
Surprising one. On the road to Damascus, he's going there to persecute Christians, to bring them back and to lock them up, and he meets the risen Christ. And that always amazes me just to think of that profound sense of awe that must have overcome him as he realized he was definitely going the wrong direction in more ways than one.
The awe that overcame him and the blindness that overcame him. So very.
Well, I think I think that experience was a very frightening experience. But then it became a horrifying experience when he realized that with good intentions he had been doing the opposite of what he should have been doing. And from the rest of his writings that lingered in his mind, calling himself the chief of sinners even. So.
You know, we talk about his experience as a conversion experience because he did turn and went an entirely different direction. Do you think that his conversion is an example of what all conversion should be? What do you think?
And not to pick too much at what you said, but in a way, it's not so much changing directions for him. He was zealous for God all along. It's simply that now he realizes. I mean, his zeal for God, his desire to live, that just continues on. But he has a clarification now of
which way to focus it. But you ask a question that has intrigued me for a long time about dramatic conversions, and my answer would be no. I don't think that establishes a model for all conversions. In fact, I think most conversions are far less dramatic than the Apostle Paul. You know, we notice the dramatic conversions. Now, I do agree that all conversion involves a turning around away from self-centeredness and autonomy to dependence on God.
But just not as dramatic as
And actually, in my own opinion, there are a lot of people who have dramatic conversions who actually suffer as a result of that, because the drama is so big that nothing else in life approaches that, and they sometimes wonder if their religious experience is actually still alive because, you know, the high voltage is gone. And some of them fall prey to being hauled around from pillar to post to tell their story over and over and over again.
Yes. But
it also leaves people with quiet conversions feeling perhaps like they didn't have a conversion. And I think that we need to understand that there are quiet conversions, there are dramatic ones, and we really should not be suggesting that the one is the only paradigm.
And unfortunately, many people who do walk away and go over a cliff, so to speak, spiritually, they don't often come back. So
it's true.
So to make that kind of the paradigm of what to expect in the Christian life, I think would be a mistake. But I do think at the core, you're right, that it is a turning around, a change of direction. Someone, I think, too, also we could say that conversion at its essence is an encounter with the risen Christ in your life personally, experientially, and also, like Paul, hearing his call in our life, realizing that God has a specific plan and a purpose for me and being open to following that.
Yeah. And I think conversion involves the abandoning of self-sufficiency and calling out to God.
I think so. Yeah. Well, thank you, Dave and Paul. It's really amazing how God can change a person's life. Who would have thought that he would have taken the foremost persecutor of the Christians and turned him into one of his apostles? It encourages me that God is not only at work in our lives, but even those around us who may seem the least likely of responding to his grace, God is at work. As we consider Paul's letter to the Galatians this quarter, we have a special offer to you, our listeners. It's a brand new book I've written especially for the study. It's called Galatians, A Fiery Response to a Struggling Church. Each chapter is full of spiritual insights and stories that really help to explain Paul's letter in more detail and to show its relevance for our lives today. This week's chapter is entitled Saul of Tarsus, From Persecutor to Apostle. We'll be glad to send you a copy this week. We're asking for a donation of $20 or more when you request this insightful book. I'm sure you'll find it well worth it, and your gift will help support the radio ministry of Good Word. To request your copy of Galatians, A Fiery Response to a Struggling Church, call us this week at 509-527-2194. That number again is 509-527-2194. Or go online to wallawalla.edu/goodword. Or you can send an email to goodword@wallawalla.edu. We do ask for a donation of $20 when you request Galatians, A Fiery Response to a Struggling Church. I'm looking forward to the rest of this series on Paul's letter to the Galatians. And remember, our past and present programs are available to download or for online listening. You can learn more about that at our webpage, wallawalla.edu/goodword. Thank you for listening to today's program, and please join us again next week as we continue to explore Galatians and the difference God wants it to make in our lives. Until then, for Good Word, I'm Carl Cozart.
Listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.